I may speak with bravest fire and have the gift to all inspire and have not love, my words are vain as sounding brass and hopeless gain. Or as Paul put it, if I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. Where does love come from? Are we born with it? Or do we have to go out and seek it and find it? Some of us grew up with some amount of unconditional love. And if there is a gift that every child should receive, this is it. The sense that you are loved and lovable just as you are. That you don't have to do anything or be anything in order to earn that love. But even if you grew up with an ample amount of that, my guess is that you still have to learn to trust in it, because we receive so many messages that tell us otherwise. And what if you didn't grow up with that foundation of unconditional love? What if you were taught at home and in church that love has to be earned and deserved, and that it's only given out sparingly? I think of those well-known lines from Marianne Williamson, in which she reflects on the importance of trusting the light and love that is within us. She says, "We were born to make manifest the glory of God within us. It is not just in some of us, it is in everyone." The question is, do you believe that? Can you trust in that? Many of us, probably most of us, grew up receiving these mixed messages about love. And too often, I know, the church didn't help. We got these different images of the divine. We are told that God is love, but then there are these images of the holy throwing thunderbolts and being a judging, angry source, force. So if you're still working on this, still working out this idea and this understanding that you are loved just as you are, then take heart. You're in good company. You're definitely not alone. And I don't think this is a one-time thing. It's a lesson that we have to learn and remember over and over again. At least that's true for me. One of my spiritual heroes is Kathleen Norris, who, like many of us, drifted away from church at some point in time in her life because it didn't square with her adult view of the world. But then, almost by accident, she made her way back to faith, to a new and deeper understanding of these truths. She'd tell you that this took a lot of time and effort and that it was worth it. And I want to share with you a little passage that she writes about. She says, "Not long ago, I was asked by a college student how I could stand to go to church, how I could stand the hypocrisy of Christians." She says, "I had one of my rare inspirations when I knew the right thing to say, and I replied, 'The only hypocrite I have to worry about on Sunday morning is myself.'" She says, "We tend to forget that worship is not primarily a gathering of like-minded people, but rather, in the words of Margaret Miles, a gathering of people to be with one another in the acknowledgement that human existence originates in and is drawn towards love. Our human existence originates in love and is drawn towards love. But we forget that. Kathleen Norris says, "Even when I find church boring, I try to hold this in mind as a possibility. Like all the other fools who have dragged themselves to church on Sunday, including the pastor, I am there because I need to be reminded that love can be at the center of things if only we will keep it there." If you're like me, you come to church because you need to be reminded of this possibility, that love can be at the center of things, that life is good, that we can orient ourselves that way, the way a compass needle swings back around toward north. If you are like me, you need to be reminded that there is love and goodness in us and in our world. When I bless or baptize a child here, after the water part, I put my hand on their forehead and I look them in the eye and I say to them, "Know that you are beloved on this earth." Who among us couldn't use that blessing every now and then? Know that you are beloved on this earth. You heard this in the story I told our children this morning, what's called the story of the prodigal son. This story that Jesus told his friends to say, this is what God's love is like. That no matter what we do, or how far we wander, or what kind of mistakes we make, God is always there waiting for us, is always longing for us to be like the prodigal son, to come to our senses and to come back home. That God is less like a judge or an angry king or a thunderbolt thrower, and more like a mother longing for her child to come back home. Isn't this why, no matter how often we hear them, Paul's words on love can resonate with us and move us so? Because they touch something deep within us, don't they? Because they resonate with the core of our being. Because this is who we are and how we are meant to live. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Our society and our own human egos tell us that we should be putting ourselves at the center, that we are here to look out for number one. And then we wonder why we feel disconnected and adrift, why life seems sometimes to lose its meaning and purpose. It's because we need to orient ourselves toward something larger and longer lasting than our own immediate needs. Because if we put ourselves at the center, think of one of those solar system mobiles. If we put ourselves at the center, everything gets thrown out of balance. We need something bigger and brighter, something more than ourselves at the center. Do you remember the ending of the movie Casablanca? At the airport, when Rick is about to say goodbye to Ilsa, and he says to her, "I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world." He's saying there are bigger things going on than us. Please don't hear me as saying that you shouldn't practice self-care, or that you shouldn't get enough rest or exercise, or shouldn't do everything you can to tend to your own soul. I'm not saying that. You definitely need to love yourself and care for yourself if you're going to be of any use to others, right? And please don't hear me saying that the ego is bad and we ought to be hanging our heads and apologizing for who we are and hiding our light under a basket. No, of course not. Let's affirm that we do come into this world with what Matthew Fox calls original blessing, that we are already good enough, and that we're meant to live our lives as fully as we can, to develop our talents and our gifts, to let our own light shine and share the love that we have known, so that we bring more light and more love into this broken and beautiful world. Hundreds of years ago, way back in the second century, there was a saint named Irenaeus, a theologian, and he said, "The glory of God is a human fully alive." When you put love at the center, when you realize it isn't all up to you, but that you do have a vital part to play, then doesn't this help you to be more free and more fully alive? The dancer Martha Graham says, "There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium, and it will be lost. It is not your job to determine how good it is or how it compares to anyone else. It is only your job to keep the channel open." We have a hymn in our hymnal, "Make channels for the streams of love." It is our job to keep the channel open, and to remember that we are here as part of a great love. It's our job to trust that, to know it, to feel it deep in our bones, and to let that knowledge that we are loved already, that we don't have to do anything to earn that love, to let it inspire us so that we become conduits of that love, to share it widely and wildly. You might be able to hear the voices of our littlest ones putting coffee hour together right now. Think about the love that is in them as they run through the world. I'm not necessarily suggesting that those of us who are middle-aged or older should do that. But what if we remembered and re-inhabited some of that energy and boundless love? Do you know what the word prodigal means? It means spending freely and recklessly, giving extravagantly. In the parable of the prodigal son, isn't it the parent in the story, the one who welcomes his wandering child home with open arms? Isn't he the true prodigal? Because of how he gives his love freely without counting the cost. And Jesus said, this is what God's love is like. So please, if you don't know anything else, know that you are beloved on this earth. And if you ever forget that, come back to church and see that in the faces of others. You could wander over and check out these windows that our forebears installed here, that they put there to remind us down through the ages that this love, freely given and freely shared, is meant to be at the center of our faith. That we are here to keep love at the center of it all. And now, faith, hope, and love abide. These three. And the greatest of these is love. Now and forever. Amen.